Today's Survivor Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is amazing because they are fixing up your dinners one meal at a time, because Blue Apron sends you all the materials you need to make your own great meals in the comfort of your own home. Whether you are an expert chef or are just learning the ropes, Blue Apron sends you all the ingredients you need to make a great meal. Nicole and I love it. I'm so happy when I ask Nicole what's for dinner and she tells me that it's Blue Apron, because I know that we're having something new and not something that she came up with on her own, because Blue Apron gives you everything you need in terms of the direction and also the perfect portions of the ingredients to make all sorts of great cuisines from around the world. So go ahead and give it a try. All of the meals are within 500 to 700 calories. Works out to about $10 per meal per person to get it. And it is a really great way to avoid spending so much time scheming and plotting in the grocery store. If you jump on Blue Apron right now, you'll get your first two meals for free. The meals on the menu for this week, the week of October 5th, they've got seared pork chops with roasted apple, sweet potato, and Brussels sprouts. And also for you vegetarians out there, poblano, mushroom, and potato tacos. So get your first two meals on us by going to blueapron.com/RHAP. That's our treat. Get the first two meals on us when you go to blueapron.com/RHAP, and you'll make sure that you never lose dinner. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sisterdino here with some special coverage of Survivor Cambodia, because we are bringing in a great friend of the podcast for what may or may not be some sort of weekly recurring segment or its own thing based on your reaction here today. But this is something that I'm very excited to talk about, because this is a person that has been a longtime authority on Survivor. You heard from him right before Survivor Worlds Apart. And here he is, the great David Bloomberg, formerly of Reality News Online.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, David, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been looking forward to the season, and so far it has not disappointed.
It has not disappointed. And David, for as far back as, how far back did you do the what the survivors should have learned and why the certain survivors lost articles? When did you start doing that?
I started doing that after season one. It started as a newspaper article, and then it just built up from there as each season went by. So I would do these columns, you know, at the beginning of the season on what survivors should have learned, and then I would do the weekly look at why each player lost based on this column.
And so for years and years and years, David was blogging about each season and talking about why each survivor lost, going back to his rules of what the survivors should have learned to this point and what the violations were of those rules. David and I talked about this as a podcast going back to Survivor Worlds Apart. We did the What Worlds Apart Survivors Definitely Should Have Learned. If you want to revisit that podcast or just the show notes from that show, you could do so at robhaswebsite.com/survivor rules. But here we are today to talk about why the first two players from Survivor Cambodia lost the game.
That's right. That's right. I wouldn't necessarily have expected these two to be the first ones, but here we are.
And so we're going to talk about that. And again, who knows if you guys like this, we'll try to figure out a way to do this with all of the survivors this season. So definitely we want to hear from you in the comments on this one, especially whether you agree or disagree with what we're going to talk about here today. First off, David, before we get into that, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. I did want to ask you a question. Do you remember when I met you at the post-finale party for your season? What were the first words you said to me?
Why did I lose?
Yep, that was it.
Yeah. Still wondering. Still wondering. No, I know. I know. I know all too well. But so this is a fun exercise, because we'll see ultimately what holds up. And I think that these all-star seasons, I think, are a lot trickier than when we see people for the first time on. There were nobodies, and they're sort of people that are unknown elements. and we see them. And I think that pretty much everything is in the episode. When we go through these for the All-Star seasons, I think that there's probably a lot more subtext and things that are probably maybe some inside baseball reasons and things that don't quite make the edit on why certain survivors go home.
Oh, I agree. I was thinking that too. If you know, when we looked at these first two episodes, I think what we saw on TV is by no means the full story, and in some ways may even be misleading a little bit about the real reason that they were voted off, because there's secret scenes, there's interviews, and I know Steven says they're, you know, not canon, but in this case...
Oh, no, he changed his opinion on that. I believe they're canon when it's him on the show.
Oh, how convenient. And, you know, there's Twitter. I mean, we have, quite frankly, unprecedented access mm-hmm. to the current survivors. I can't imagine having had this access back when I was writing about Survivor. During the show, right after the show, I sent a tweet to Varner and said, hey, is this the way it happened? And he responded to me.
Yeah.
You know, back when I was doing it, it was all everything. You had a CBS PR person on the phone making sure that nothing that was said was the wrong thing. You know, there were times when a contestant slipped and, you know, had to say, okay, I won't talk about that. And now they're wide open. I'm sure they obviously have things they're not supposed to talk about, but there's a lot more information out there that we can draw from.
It's the Wild West. And David, yes. Just to set up real quick, for in case people haven't heard our previous podcast before, you were also on with us during the Worlds Apart. We did the voicemails last season as well. But in case people aren't familiar with your background in Reality News Online, can you just set that up real quick?
Yeah, with Reality News Online, I had created that back... somewhere around the second season of Survivor. There was a whole series of events leading up to that. And as a matter of fact, I think the first article that got posted on Reality News Online was Why Kel Lost, if you remember Kel.
No love, of course, I remember Kel.
Well, of course.
No love for Deb Eaton?
Well, it just the way it happened, the website started up right after Kel.
Okay.
And... so that led actually to I communicated with Kel for quite a while after that, actually, but have since lost touch. And it ran for many years and had to shut it down a few years ago due to a variety of reasons. But, obviously never lost my interest in Survivor and shows like that. And it was always my first reality TV love. So,
okay. And so here we are ready to talk about what's going on with why the Survivor Cambodia players have lost. Can you also just set up, let's go through your rules, because you have gone through over the course of 30 seasons and continually updated these basic tenets of Survivor strategy. So can you set those up for us as well? Because we're always going to look at why these survivors lost through the prism of these rules that you have set up.
Right, right. So the first rule, the primary rule, the most important rule is to scheme and plot.
You got to.
You have to. Despite what some of these quote unquote old school survivors think, you have to. And so that's the biggest rule. Most important, and it has to start from the very beginning. So, you know, maybe I should just address this old school, new school thing now, because it's something I was kind of gritting my teeth over. People are acting like it's not old school to strategize, but there's nobody more old school than Richard Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
He was the original epitome of scheming and plotting. And I wrote about this from the beginning, a lot of which was based on him. And all of that sort of strategy was old school. And to me, the fact that some of these players now, these returning players, don't seem to get that, it makes me wonder if that's why they're back for a second chance and they didn't get it the first time.
Yeah, I hear you that. I think that maybe the difference is between the second rule, which is, of course, don't scheme and plot too much. For the new school player, is there no such thing as scheming and plotting too much?
Well, I think there's definitely, it's accelerated. You may be right that in the old school days, scheming and plotting too much had a different viewpoint. Like if you came on too strong too early, whereas now you're expected to the minute you hit the beach. It's, you know, as Varner was talking about the Shireen train, you know, hitting him with the scheming right off the bat there. But even in the old school days, I heard from players when I interviewed them at the time, they said they waited too long. They, you know, they wanted it to come to them. They were surprised that people had already been forming alliances. And
for me, I think that it's probably just the baseline level for each thing. Like, I think that there are almost no players that come into the game that don't scheme and plot at all. Whereas I think when these rules first started, I think you had people who were not scheming and plotting at all being a violation of the first rule. I think that everybody comes in at least with the idea of, okay, I need to be making an alliance, and that the scheming and plotting too much, for people to think you're scheming and plotting too much, is probably you're scheming and plotting, you know, 10 times more than people were early on when we were talking about don't scheme and plot too much.
Right, right.
It's inflation.
Right. And, you know, the scheming and plotting that you do now, you need to do it with multiple people, have backup alliances and things like that. But you cannot try to be all things to all people. You can't spend all of your time scheming and plotting, or else that's where people will think, oh, he's scheming and plotting too much. He's trying to be with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so while you have to, you know, as the third rule talks about, you have to be flexible. You have to be flexible in a way that doesn't make it appear you're just, you know, promising the world to everyone. And so, you know, moving into that third rule, it kind of expands on that, because the key on this, and this was something we saw over and over again, and I think we're going to see here, is you cannot simply tie yourself to one alliance and hope that it survives. We saw that over and over again. If anything, maybe that's what the old school thinking is. You make your alliance, you go forward with it, and you hope that everybody in it is solid.
Mm-hmm.
These days, and even before these days, you can't do that, because everyone's not going to be solid, because people are not and should not be happy with, oh, I'm going forward, I'm in fourth place, that's fine, I'll be in fourth place. Yeah. No, everybody should be trying to win.
Look at the options.
So that's where the, you know, those portions of the strategy all kind of fall in.
Okay.
The fourth rule expands a little beyond that and says not to let your emotions control you. And so this goes both ways. You can't be friends with everyone and allow that to control how you're going to vote. And you also can't get pissed off at someone and vote them out or break up an alliance or something like that simply for that reason. So this is where you just have to let strategy rule the day instead of emotions.
So keep your emotions in check.
Right, right. And then something that kind of blends both of them is the fifth rule, which is pretending to be nice and playing the social game. And there's a fine line here, and I think we'll see some of this later in our discussion today, which is the social game is still part of the game. And you have to pretend to be nice to people. And again, it's the pretending that's key. Whether you like them or not, you can't just tell them what you think. And you just need to keep them in your good graces, and you need to stay in their good graces. From the beginning, for obvious reasons, you don't want to get voted out because you pissed someone off. Mm-hmm. And later, because you don't want to end up in a situation like Russell Hance. You know, where yes, you played a masterful strategic game and everybody hates you and no one is going to give you the prize.
Okay.
So that's where those come in.
Okay.
And then the sixth rule is simply don't be too much of a threat. And this can be in, you know, any of a number of ways. It changes throughout the game how you're going to be a threat. I mean, the most obvious way is, you know, as you're coming upon or at the merge, if you're going to win a bunch of challenges, then clearly you're a threat. If you're too nice to take to the end, clearly you're a threat. If you're too strategic, you're a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those reasons, you have to manage to avoid becoming that sort of threat.
Yeah. Interesting that you could be a threat in each of the three facets of the game, the, you know, strategic, the social, and the athletic part of the game.
Right, right. And it all depends. So now after that,
and also just to tie back to that, like, it's interesting that those three facets of the game, I think you also are a threat at different points in the game, where the strategic threat is a threat that you would probably target early, where the athletic threat is somebody you would target in the middle, and then the social threat is somebody you would target like at the very end, like you would knock them out like final four, final five, because you don't want them to go to the jury.
Exactly, exactly. Although I do think that the athletic threats, I think that as the game evolves, and you would know better than anyone about the evolution of the game, I think that people are considering less waiting on the physical threats, because there can be tribal mix-ups, tribal, you know, swaps, new tribes, going 2 to 3 tribes. Is it really worth keeping a physical threat around if you don't know if that person is going to be on your side anymore after a couple of days?
That's a very good point, though. In practice, are we seeing a lot of physical threats voted out early because they're physical threats? I mean, the one that sort of comes to mind is Garrett in Survivor Kageyan, where David Sampson doesn't trust him. But outside of that, are there others that you can think of?
Not right off the bat. I just think it's something that is in the back of players' minds, or should be, or at least I think people are not necessarily keeping them around specifically for that reason.
And even with Garrett, though, just to go back to who I had said, I don't think that's why he got voted out either.
Right. Right. And it's not, I shouldn't say it's why they're getting voted out. More people are not using it as a reason not to vote them out.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to get rid of someone for another reason, you don't as much see players, I don't think, saying, oh, we have to keep him around because he'll help us win in challenges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right or wrong, I don't think they're saying it as much. And I think, as a prediction of mine, I think going forward, you're not going to see it as much.
Okay.
So now the rest of the article, the seventh rule deals with a voting strategy. You know, vote off the weak first, which kind of contradicts what I just said. Then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And that's varied meanings. And I think you and I actually debated that back and forth in mm-hmm. the first podcast. And I don't think it necessarily applies as much in an all-star season, quite honestly. So I don't think we're going to be addressing that too much. And then the next, I had a couple of appendices, which just dealt with idle play and the jury. And obviously, we won't have to worry about that for a while either.
Well, the idle thing I do think is interesting, because your first appendix on the idols is do whatever it takes to get idols. And what you had mentioned was that idols are very easy to find. However, that we are seeing players who are, in Stephen Fishback's case, you know, going out and doing whatever it takes to find idols. Certainly we've had other people who have made themselves targets by looking for the idols. We also have the possibility that somebody will overplay their hand and try to go out and find an idol to the detriment of their performance in the challenge this season. So I think that's an interesting one to watch as we talk through Survivor Cambodia.
I agree. I think it is surprising that no one on the other tribe has found an idol, but it may just be because they're all so paranoid that no one really wants to go looking for one.
Yeah. Savage may have really put the gauntlet down. Hey, if I catch anybody out there looking for the idol, you're busted.
Right. Back to the days of burn that idol clue mm-hmm. in Blood versus Water.
Yeah. Savage is like a modern day Brad Culpepper.
I think Eliza would agree, and she would say the same thing.
She would be the Candace in that parable. Yeah. In fairness, you know, Brad Culpepper did go off and look for the idol clue with John Cody, but then did vote off John Cody. So
yeah.
He does not care for the hunt for the idol.
If he can't have it, no one can.
Yes. All right. So now that we have that in place, what do you want to talk through? Do you want to talk through Vetus? Do you want to talk through Vetus and Shireen at the same time?
Well, normally I discuss each one individually, but I think what we're going to find is that there are some significant overlaps here. So I think it makes sense to address both of them at the same time.
Great.
And part of that is, like you've already said, one thing that's similar is what we saw on TV, not the full story.
Right.
So if we go by the simplest answer, by just what we saw on TV, you know, Vetus was smarmy and Shireen was mean while Terry was nice to Abby Maria. There's your answer.
Yes.
Except that's not at all the answer.
Not even a little bit.
Right. And so when you draw from some other parts that we saw on the show itself that may have been downplayed, but they at least still appeared, and some secret scenes, interviews, Twitter, everything, you know, I think we'll find the greater story here. So getting into it, we need to ask ourselves, why did Vetus and Shireen lose?
Mm-hmm.
We begin, of course, with scheming and plotting. And both of these players knew how important that was. They went about it in different ways, though. Vetus, we believe, had pregame alliances that seemed to put him in a good position with his particular tribe. He ended up, you know, in pretty good stead, we think. Whereas Shireen, she jumped into the strategizing with both feet as soon as they hit the beach. So obviously, you know, like you said, everyone knows this, especially these two knew it. There was no failure in this area for either of them.
No failure. But interesting that they took different approaches, where Vetus probably seemingly did more work before the game started, where it seemed like Shireen was doing more hustling on the ground once the game began.
Right. And I do wonder if that's just because, I mean, Vetus has longer standing ties, especially between his brother and the players, where Shireen was fresh off her season mm-hmm. and didn't really have any ties other than what she could have forged on social media.
Right. And not to say that Shireen wasn't doing any sort of pregame talking with people, because I would assume that she was, but it seemed like at the time that the game began, she was doing more within the constraints of the game than Vetus was. One of the things that also Shireen had said to me, and I'm not sure ultimately, because I had talked to her twice on Thursday, I spoke to her that I went to go appear with Dalton Ross on his Survivor talk, and I was talking with Shireen, and that was sort of a longer interview that sort of got cut down. So I don't remember if this was either on camera or off camera, but I think it was something that was probably cut, where I had asked about, like, did you feel like you should have voted off somebody else instead of Vetus in that first vote? And she had said that Vetus was just shutting down any sort of alliance talk because he sort of was good with his group and he wasn't really having those conversations with her or her group about potentially working together or talking about the vote. He was just like, hey, I'm just here to have fun. I'm just here to have a good time.
That did not make the cut. That ended up on the editing room floor there. But it is very interesting. And it goes along, I think, with what I would have expected from Vetus. He had his alliance. Why would he need to worry about anything else in his mind? Especially if they all believed that Varner was tight with them.
Yeah. And just to go back to that for one more second, that Shireen felt like that, okay, well, Vetus is somebody who is never going to work with us. He's not even having those conversations with us. I don't think that Vetus actually was there to have fun. I'm not implying that.
Right.
But I think that Shireen group felt like that Vetus is somebody who is never going to work with us. And on top of that, is also a threatening player.
Right. Right. So, you know, moving on to the second rule, which you wonder, okay, did either of them scheme and plot too much? I think you just answered for Vetus. The answer is no. But for Shireen, you know, watching social media, watching the message boards, I think I'm going to surprise some people here and also say the answer is no. Because this rule isn't necessarily meant to target those who were scheming in the way she was, trying to get a core group together. Rather, it was, as I had said earlier, targeting those who are trying to scheme with everyone and therefore comes across as untrustworthy. She had an alliance, at least she thought she did, where everyone should have known exactly where they stood. She wasn't looking to jump around, well, especially at this point. They could have been solid. I'm just thinking this through, and sometimes this happens as I'm as I used to write these articles, and I'm actually kind of mid sentence here. I'm going to go back on something that I just said and switch back to Vetus. Sorry for jumping around here.
Yes,
but you know, from what you said, I said, "Oh yeah, that's obviously not the case." But there was something actually that triggered my thought when I was watching this, and he wasn't trying to scheme in the same way. But he said he was trying to manipulate them. He said that in that episode. But at the same time, he didn't want to be seen as a manipulator. So there was, I think, that perception of being untrustworthy. So I think combine that with what, you know, the fact that he wouldn't work with that group. And so there is a little bit of that scheming and plotting too much just mixed in there because, like I said, by his own admission, he was trying to manipulate them.
Let me just go back to the Shireen part of this, because I think I would answer that she was guilty of scheming and plotting too much. And I think that I would say that because when we go back to where it was either going to be Shireen or Spencer, from what Shireen had said to me in exit interviews and then also with Dalton Ross was, at the point that she found out from Abby Maria, it was going to be either herself or Spencer to be the one to go home. She tried to turn it around and put it on to Varner. And because she was sort of spearheading that, hey, we need to take out Varner, because Shireen wasn't playing for the tribe swap. Shireen was playing as if this was heroes versus villains and that Takeo was going to be together up until the merge. So she felt like, boy, if Spencer goes out here, I'm the next one to go anyway. So let me, you know, go all in here and make our move to try to get Varner out, because let's turn it around on him and make a run at him. And then at the point that Varner got word that Shireen was coming after him, that's when the vote became for Shireen and not for Spencer, which I think is also going to tie into rule number three about being flexible. Where had Shireen decided, hey, you know what, let me just let Spencer go here, like Kelly did, like PG did, then Shireen lives to see the tribe swap and maybe gets new life in the game, where Spencer is going to be the person that's going to enjoy that second life in the game and not Shireen.
Right. And what you've just stumbled on is how certain things, you know, depending on the viewpoint of, you know, whether it's you or me or someone else, can fall into different areas. Because where I had that placed was in the threat, don't be a threat area. So that's why I didn't think of it necessarily as scheming and plotting too much, because she was trying to save her alliance at that point. But if we skip ahead and talk about, you know, whether or not she was a threat, she became a threat when Varner saw she was gunning for him.
Right.
So
more so than Spencer.
Right, right. So that's where I had it. And we can come back to that, you know, in a couple of rules.
And also, in addition to this, it's so hard to talk about these things because we are able to look at them with the added benefit of context and hindsight, because we know the tribe swap is coming. If there is no tribe swap coming, then what Shireen does is more correct. But based on the fact that we know the tribe swap is coming, she's probably better off just to watch Spencer get voted out. And then she's the person who goes into the tribe swap.
Right, right. And there, I mean, with the producers throwing everything at them this season, she obviously had no way of knowing.
Of course.
That, you know, I was thinking, quite honestly, that this season, for example, would have Redemption Island, because they're here for redemption, you know, and I remember talking to Steven on social media about that, and he said, oh my God, if they do that, I'm blaming you.
Well, I think they said that they didn't want to have third chances. This was right. Second chance only.
So, you know, when I saw the numbers and saw that there were 20 and they would eventually be at 18, I thought, I wonder if they'll go to three tribes at that point. But in the game itself, you can't count on that. And I think that what Shireen did to save her alliance made absolute perfect sense. Mm-hmm. It's just that the players she was dealing with were all locked in, tunnel visioned. And so none of them were going to switch to her and target Varner.
Yeah. And I think that some of her allies in PG and Kelly, I think, are also playing an anybody but me game as well. So at the point that the vote is coming in for them, I think they were very quick to flip over and they didn't want to deal with anything that could have potentially gotten the vote back onto them. PG says in the episode, I'll vote wherever the numbers are. So right. Once they say, okay, it's going to be Shireen, PG and Kelly are very quick to just get out and go with whatever the majority is.
Right. And I saw some people on social media asking Kelly, why were you so quick? And she said, well, I didn't really have a choice. And I agree with her. I mean, what was she going to do? Make a stand with three of them? It made no sense. Yeah. She had to go with the numbers at that point.
I would play it the same way if I was somebody who was in this sort of game where there's so many players in the game and it's so early. I think It's too soon to make a stand.
So anyway, if we go back to the ordering of our rules here, I guess, you know, the third rule being flexible, I think both of them knew that. I'm not talking about yoga flexible.
Of course. Or yoga.
Or yoga. Well, you know, that's a whole other tribe. Come on. But from a strategy point, you know, they knew that. So we can just skip that. And
I would say that I think that both of them in their own way are guilty of not being flexible enough. Vetus not being flexible enough to have those conversations with the Shireen / Beach People group. I think had he been more flexible and made himself seem as though someone who that group could potentially work with down the road, maybe he's not the first one to go. Maybe they pick a different target like a Terry to go and be first. And then secondly, I think that Shireen not flexible enough to ultimately just let it go and be Spencer, as opposed to standing up and fighting for her alliance there and really being very much all in on the new school Beach People alliance being the ultimate way for her to get through to the merge.
Yeah, with Vetus, you know, when I was originally thinking this through, I didn't know what you had just mentioned to me, but even with that, I'm trying to think who they would have voted out otherwise. It wouldn't have been Varner. And I don't think Varner would have let it be Terry or Wigglesworth. Mm-hmm. So maybe Wu? I don't know. I'm just trying to think through who it would have been if it hadn't been Vetus.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because like I said, I don't think Varner would have flipped on the other ones. I think he's too solid mm-hmm. with Terry and Wigglesworth.
But just to go back to Varner, in terms of nobody has more pregame alliances than this guy, but he's also willing to vote against his pregame alliance on that first day and have those conversations with Shireen and Spencer and Kelly on those first couple days of the game. He didn't give them a vibe. And again, I think he had pregame alliances with them too, but I think there's nothing more flexible than a pregame alliance with every single player in the game.
That's true. I do think that Vetus worked as a sacrificial lamb for him.
Yeah.
I think that he was not as tight with Vetus as he was with the others.
Right. I don't sense that Vetus was on any of those calls pregame with Jeff. I think that he was on the phone with Terry and then maybe with Shane as well. And those guys were connected with Aris, and Aris was, you know, saying, okay, Vetus is good. Talk to Vetus when you get there. Aris is talking to Vetus. So I think there's probably one degree of separation. So I think he was kind of a person that Varner didn't mind sacrificing.
Right, right. So as for Shireen and flexibility, you are right in that regard, except I still think if she had let it go with the flow and, okay, Spencer is gone, well, then she's obviously next. You've mm-hmm. got to, at that point, be hoping for an immunity challenge win, which, you know, didn't look very promising, or a tribal mix-up. So I've got to think in the moment it makes more sense to try and change the vote. It's a difficult thing to read from where we are, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's probably a different conversation as to what is the optimal play. I mean, you could make the best decision based on the information you have and still get voted off, as opposed to what is the decision when you know what the, you know, you could be at the blackjack table and, you know, have a 19. And if we know the next card is going to be a 2, the obvious move is to hit. But if you don't do that, obviously you would stay and the dealer has 20, you lose.
Right, right. A different way in playing poker, there's always the optimal move and the optimal strategy, and it won't always win. It'll mm-hmm. win, you know, you go all in with aces and you're going to win 81% of the time, but 19% of the time you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, any individual time, you may be the loser there, even if you did the right thing. Yeah. So I agree.
And just one more thing going back to Vitas, where he's not the one that has the pregame connection with Varner. It's Terry. And Vitas is talking to Terry and he's allegedly saying to him, hey, is Varner good? Are you sure Varner's not going to flip on us? And Terry's like, no, trust me. He's good. He's solid. He's good. And Vitas puts his trust in Terry's pregame alliance. And this is actually somewhat similar to what happens to Vitas in Survivor Blood versus Water, where Aris has the relationship with Jervis and Tyson, and then they get to the merge, and Vitas is saying to Aris, hey, is everything good here? He's like, no, trust me, I've got Tyson, I've got Jervis. And then both times, the person who Vitas is putting all his trust in says he has these relationships which just don't hold up when we get to the vote.
Right, right. I don't know how you remedy that. I mean, does Vitas go to Varner and say, hey, just wanted to double check, you know, everything that your good friend Terry said?
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, that's kind of insulting.
Yeah. So I think he's also hurt by the fact that they don't get to have that sort of powwow before the vote as well. So they're sort of like going right from the challenge. And then also supposedly Varner is then potentially worried about this 5-5 tie. And so he's not going into a tie based on what happened to him in Australia. And so there's a lot of extenuating circumstances at this right. first vote.
Right. With that, we'll move on to the aspect of not letting your emotions control you. And I think for Vitas, I don't think this really played much of a role.
Me neither.
Okay. So, but Shireen, you know, by what she said in various interviews, she had a pretty tight lid on things for the first few days, but everything eventually caught up with her from, you know, stemming from the way she was treated last season, the very emotionally draining finale, no time to decompress. And then she had to deal with Abby Maria. And I mean, I think Abby Maria could drive the most patient person in the world to want to scream.
Mm-hmm.
Not only on the show, but just from what I've seen in her interactions on Twitter with some of her castmates too, mm-hmm. they're all facepalming by, you know, what she's saying. And so, you know, Shireen had a couple momentary lapses in her emotional control. She hadn't signed up to play babysitter for Abby Maria. And that's all it takes for someone like her.
Yeah.
So Abby Maria was potentially lost at that point. Now I'm going to say potentially, because I'm going to circle back to this. Because in the end, I don't think this was a major reason for the way the vote ended up. But let's circle back to that. So let's put a placeholder there.
Yeah, I think that this is a tough one, because I wouldn't say that it was that Shireen was overly emotional. If anything, I feel like that she was not as empathic as she would need to be, which speaks to a lack of emotions. But maybe it really depends on, she seemed frustrated with Abby Maria. Is frustration an emotion?
I would say so. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess so, but it's not like that she had a vendetta against Abby Maria, or she was just, you know, her and PG were both venting about their frustration with Abby Maria. And I guess that's where you could say that they were emotional. And then she was probably somewhat insensitive to the fact that Abby Maria was so upset about this that she was willing to change the vote. and acting in to what their side of the numbers would assume was acting in an illogical way. So I think that it is emotional adjacent, I would say.
Yeah.
It's not quite like that, you know, some fault of being overly emotional.
Right. Right. And this leads us into the fifth rule because of the Abby Maria situation. You know, Shireen, I think, tried to play nice with her, but she wasn't really dealing with, yeah, I hate to say this, but with a normal person here.
Mm-hmm.
And so as all of that was happening, you know, what we saw was Terry comforting her. That's what we saw on TV. What I saw and what I learned more about, you know, just in the immediate aftermath, Varner and Terry, I think, saw their opportunity and swept in to bring Abby Maria over to them. You know, you talked to John Carroll about alliance maintenance versus alliance building.
Mm-hmm.
And with someone like Abby Maria, I think she's in an emotional position where it may be impossible to maintain her because the grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
And so, like, for example, Kelly Wentworth and others on her tribe said on social media that they did talk to Abby Maria after the blow up. But Abby Maria apparently only remembers Terry doing it. So not only did we see it on TV, but even on social media, she's ignoring everyone else who came over and spoke to her. And so Terry must have done one hell of a job of doing that. But, you know, it was a social game play. It was not just being a nice guy. And what happened was I had asked, this is the one that I asked Varner, hey, what was the cause of swinging Abby Maria? Was it him or was it Terry being nice to him? And he said that they tag teamed her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not just, as we were led to believe on TV, if you have those social interactions, you know, you'll do great at the game. Those social interactions were at least in some part a portion of a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So it all, you know, starts to come together in that regard.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see that because there were people in, like I said, on social media message boards saying, you know, see, all you have to do is be old school and be nice. But I still say, no, that's playing the social game. It's still a game. Yeah. So that's where they kind of outflanked Shireen in that regard.
Yeah. The social game was the thing that opened the door to have then the strategic conversation.
Right. Right.
And with all due respect to Terry, it wasn't because he's such a nice guy that that's what happened.
Exactly.
And just one other thing on that also, because Terry in that situation is a man with his back against the wall. If Terry is in the majority alliance, like hypothetically speaking, let's say that they were trying to vote out Abby Maria, but let's just say hypothetically they voted out PG at that last vote. And Abby Maria was in that, you know, minority group of the shelter people, say, with Shireen and Spencer and Kelly, and say they had the numbers coming out of that first vote. I'm not sure if Terry still goes to Abby Maria to try to cheer her up if she's not part of a potential swing to get the numbers back on his side.
Right. I agree.
Because you're looking for an in when you're somebody who's down in the numbers. Terry's back was against the wall, and I'm sure he's going through his head like, okay, who could I get to vote for me? Okay, oh, those guys are in a spat with Abby Maria. Let me go work on Abby Maria to see if I can pick her up and get her vote.
Right, and unfortunately, that's not what we saw on TV. What we saw on TV was, see, being nice gets you far.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just a nice guy, you'll go far in the game. It's not quite that simple.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, flipping to Vetus in terms of the fifth rule, you know, we had said we knew he was trying to manipulate some people's opinions of him, but for at least some of them, it obviously came off wrong. It came off, as we heard, as smarmy, which you know, that's what was shown on TV also, but I really think that was small little clips. So I think he was trying to play the social game, but he wasn't really succeeding in that regard. And but again, what we saw could have been a result of kind of the opposite of what you were just talking about. The majority in that case, presuming they had Varner at that point, already knew that they were going to target Vetus. So there's no reason to be terribly nice to him in, you know, their little snide comments, you know, oh, his idol is showing, you know, and talking about how he kind of creeps certain of them out. So it's kind of the reverse situation of the back against the wall. Their back wasn't against the wall. They had no reason to accept him as being nice. So whatever he may have tried, it wasn't going to work on these particular people, I don't think.
Okay.
So everything that we've talked about right now, up to this point, you kind of had a lead into earlier, but I think it all pales in comparison to the sixth rule. Don't be too much of a threat.
Right.
Because, you know, we saw some of it on the show. We saw a lot more afterwards. And so starting with Vetus on the show, Shireen and Spencer were talking to Varner about, you know, Vetus has way too many connections. Both on their tribe, on the other tribe. And as you well know, when you're trying to get the first person voted off, it doesn't take much more than that. You plant a seed and, okay, you know, let's target that one person. He was a strategic threat. He needed to go.
Right.
So, you know, what more reason do you need than that for
the
first
vote? He's not just a strategic threat. Vetus is also a physical threat and a social threat.
Right. Well, that's true. Especially looking down the road, you let him stay and the physical threat especially comes out, and the social threat, if he was able to carry through on his goal of manipulating the other people, as mm-hmm. he said, then yes, he definitely becomes a social threat. So you get him out first and you don't have to worry about anything. Yes. Yes. So now switching for the second vote. You know, Varner flat out said in one of the secret scenes, Shireen was a threat. She was his competition. He wanted to be the only one pulling any strings, not her. And it was his goal to get rid of those threats.
Yeah.
And so you already talked about that, you know, that she was targeting him. That drew his attention. I'm sure that beforehand, he thought Spencer was more of a threat. Because you look at him, he's more of a threat in challenges. And, you know, just his history, he appears to be more of a threat. But the minute Shireen starts targeting Varner, she becomes, you know, red level threat.
There's also a point where he's talking about Spencer, and he talks about how he's the smartest young man that I've ever met in my life. And then he talks about Shireen. And again, I don't know at what point in all of this is, but he talks about her, and she's just as smart, but she also can talk to you and make you feel like she's your best friend. She's a saleswoman, he says about her. So also words to describe somebody who he thinks is a big threat in the game.
Right, right. Definitely. So, and even if he was leaning towards Spencer, like I said, coming after him, it just showed her strength of personality. Mm-hmm. And there's no way he can let someone like that stay in the game.
Yeah.
So that's where I think the key thing was. And that's where then Varner's strategy becomes aimed at removing that threat, just like Shireen's was one episode earlier. So if Varner had wanted to stay with the beach people, you know, this gets back to what I was saying with Terry and Abby Maria. If Varner had wanted to stay, I believe he could have convinced Abby Maria, no matter what other emotional issues were going on, to stay with him and stay with the beach people. But he wanted to switch back and get rid of the threats, which then became narrowed down to the threat, which was Shireen. And so while you have in these, you know, in tribal council and elsewhere, everybody talking about old school, I still think Varner is playing a very new school game. And he wants to be that one, that lone puppet master. And to, you know, quote him, basically, he didn't want anybody coming back and biting him on the ass.
What just bit my ass?
Yeah.
So he knew that the beach people were the bigger threats. The shelter people, I think he can deal with them later, especially with what we've heard. You know, like Wigglesworth just wants to work. She wants to be there. She wants to work. She wants to, you know, have her core group and move along. Someone like that, I hate to say it, but they're easy to double cross later. Because they're not even thinking in game mode, I don't think. So get rid of the ones who are and then move along. And so I think Abby Maria's over-emotional nature gave him one opening.
Yeah.
While he was already working on it. So really what it comes down to in the end here, I think, is that you look at what was going on at the first vote. Shireen knew that Vetus was too much of a threat.
Mm-hmm.
In the second, Varner knew the same about Shireen. In both cases, I would say it wasn't about emotion. It was about strategy. The threat had to go. And so I would say that is why Vetus and Shireen lost.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very fair. I think in both cases, there was just more people that were convinced that one person was a threat. If you take a look at the other options, especially at that first vote where it's Vetus versus Abby, more people were on board to get rid of the person who was the threat as opposed to the person who was the annoyance in Abby Maria. And then in the second vote, it was just a matter of that Abby Maria's name was no longer on the table. It was a question of which threat is the more threatening person to get rid of. And there was more of a groundswell to vote off Shireen, thinking that she was the bigger threat than Spencer.
Right. Now, I do think if this were a season of brand new people, brand new players, we'd never seen them before, Abby Maria is gone in that first vote.
Of course. Because there's nothing else to base it on.
Right. But they have their histories and their pregame and everything that led up to it. And, you know, that's what makes this particular iteration so much more complicated for everyone in the game.
How do you think it goes from here? Do you think that the next votes, we have a tribe swap coming on, do you think it continues to be threat, 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 threat? Or do you think that the game becomes more similar to a traditional Survivor season at some point?
I was thinking about that a little bit, and I know that the makeup of the three tribes is out there. I have not really looked at it. I think I accidentally saw some of it.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it either to this point.
Yeah, so we'll stay, you know, spoiler free here. I think it just depends on who ends up where.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so we have our tribes will go to tribes 6 starting in the next episode. Let's say you have a tribe that has, say, we have our strategic threats, we have our social threats, and we have our athletic threats. So let's just hypothetically say, okay, who are the smart players? So let's say, okay, so Spencer and Steven are on a tribe with Joe and Terry. And then also, I don't know if we have jury threats, but who would be like nice people that would go to the end?
Woo and Keith.
Woo and Keith. Okay. Who gets voted out of that group?
Well, I think Woo has made it clear that he's not aligning with Spencer in any way, shape, or form.
So is it who's the most annoying? Is it who's the worst in the challenges? Is it who's the biggest strategic threat?
I think it depends who gets to Keith first in that situation, mm-hmm. honestly. You know, I think if Spencer and Steven get to Keith and convince him, you know, God, honestly, because Joe, I think, is flexible enough.
Yeah, I don't see Joe. I just Joe was throwing the names out there as sort of like placeholders.
I think it's, gosh, it is so, so specific. I think that the strategic threats are going to be safe for a little while now with the mix-up. I think that if Steven gets away from Savage, then he will be safe. If he ends up on a tribe with Savage, he's in trouble.
Yeah, because this is really uncharted waters here, because now the tribes are again so small with the three-person tribes. What will they be doing? Will they be voting off based on threat? Will they be voted off based on physical ability? I guess probably the closest comparison that we have is probably just going back to Survivor, the All-Stars, because that was a season of three tribes, six players, returning players. And so we saw a combination of, we saw Tina get voted off because she was a threat, but also I think to some degree she wasn't going to kill them in, by losing her in the challenges. That so she was a good mixture of that. She was a winner. She was an easy person to sort of put the blame on. She was also a threat, and also that, you know, you weren't losing a ton in those physical challenges by not having her. And then Rudy, while he was a threat, I think it was much more of that he was holding them back physically. He was having problems running. So I think that was a case where he was somebody who wasn't helping them in the challenges. And then you have me, who was a combination of somebody who they viewed as a strategic threat, and also we're not going to lose too much by not having me around in the challenges. So I think that probably that's the one thing that we could go back and look at. And again, this is a long time ago, but I think that the common thing that both myself, Rudy, and Tina have in common is that we are not people who are huge difference makers in those team challenges.
Right. But this, I think, brings us back to what we were talking about earlier. If you're in here now and you've already seen they're mixing it up after just two votes, how long do you think at this point in this game, the tribes of six are going to stick around? Is it worth keeping Joey Amazing around when he may only be on your tribe for one more competition?
That's a fair point. So I guess if you hate Joey Amazing, if you feel like that Joe is not somebody that will work with you, and you think you have enough pad where you can vote him out and vote somebody else out in the next one. So say you're like insulated enough where you have three people in your alliance. Okay, let's vote out Joe. And then let's also vote out, you know, whoever the other, so you know, Terry, Jeremy, whoever it is, let's just take them out because I know we're not working with them. I think you can do it. I think that probably they go from here with two votes on the tribes of three and then go to tribes of seven coming up then in 2 weeks.
Right. And in that case, you have no reason, unless you think you're going to be the second person voted out of your tribe.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, my math is wrong on that. So we're down to 18. So do we stay with this for four votes? Do we get down to 14 and then do tribes of seven? Or do you think that we would potentially go to two tribes of eight? Because four votes is a long time.
It is. It is. I think they do tribes of eight just in case there's one really bad tribe. You know, you don't want to end up having two tribes of six and one tribe of two.
So you think if we have some sort of like Luzon, Matt Singh situation where if one tribe just sort of just flames out, then we can go ahead and switch it up.
Yeah. And I don't know how much for sure they plan these things out. I like to think that they plan it out, not worried about what's actually happening in the game. Mm-hmm. So I think that they would be wise, though, to plan for a just in case scenario. We don't want to end up with a, you know, 6-6-2. So therefore,
but you know what? We say we don't want that, but the times that that happens, that's where it's been the most interesting in these three tribe formats. And the time that it really didn't happen in Survivor Worlds Apart, that was probably the least interesting pre-merge in the seasons that have these three tribe formats.
It's
a good story that one tribe that just gets its ass kicked.
True.
And the players that are sort of like that survive that have tended to go a long way in the game.
Yeah. I still think they want to keep them guessing, though. I think they're going to switch it up sooner than that. I think they're going to go two votes and back to two tribes again.
I just wonder if that's going to be too jarring for the audience to change up the tribes again after 2 weeks.
It might be, but I think they're more concerned about letting the contestants settle in. Mm-hmm. I think they want to keep them hopping.
If I had to guess, I'd say that they'll go down to the three tribes here, and then they'll have three episodes with one, like, two tribal council episode in the mix there. So I think we'll lose four people and get it down to 7-7 and then do seven on seven for two episodes before the merge.
Yeah. I like to have a couple more than that before the merge. That's just me personally. But by that time, almost everyone's been with everyone anyway.
okay.
through the mix-ups. So could go either way.
All right, good stuff. Well, this was very fun, David.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's fun for me to think about it this way again.
Yeah, so I hope we can try to find a slot to do this. It was sort of fun to sort of take everything from that we learned from all of the discussions that we had and sort of put a bow on it and now sort of start to look forward into the next week and see who the next person that's going to lose the game coming out of episode 3 is going to be. So hopefully we'll figure out a spot, whether it's its own podcast or something that we put at the end of one of the other Survivor pieces of content that we do. That's all very much up in the air, much like the way that Survivor is looking at what to do with these tribe swaps. We will sort of play it by ear.
All right. That sounds great.
All right. Of course, you could follow David on Twitter. He's at David Bloomberg.
Yes.
And so David is very good on Twitter about answering your questions if you have any for him. If you agree or disagree with what we said about why Vetus and Shireen lost, you can also write to us in the comments on robinswebsite.com. David, do you have a hashtag for this episode of the podcast?
How about threat level red?
Threat level red. Wow. I saw that on the Muppets this past week with Miss Piggy was at threat level red.
I didn't even think about that. Yes, I saw that as well.
Yes. Can you make a comparison between Miss Piggy and Abby Maria?
I think you just did.
Well, just to go back to that Muppets TV show where Abby Maria and Miss Piggy, I think, are both the people that are in the group. Like all the Muppets are like, oh my God, you know, Miss Piggy is having it. She's flipping out. She's mad. We can't let her hear us talk about her. And so I think that the temperament is potentially similar.
Yeah, I would think so. I think the other Muppets have a longer history of knowing how to deal with her, you know, than as compared to the Survivors and Abby Maria.
So that's very fun stuff. All right. So, David, thank you again and really appreciate everybody who checked out this episode of the podcast. This week, we're going to have Denise Stapley on as our recap guest coming up on Thursday. And of course, we'll get back to the Survivor Know-It-Alls coming up on Wednesday night. So thank you guys so much for listening. Also, thanks so much to everybody who's using our links for Amazon.com. Always appreciate it when you start your shopping with robinswebsite.com/Amazon. Have a great week, everybody. Survivor Episode 3 coming up this Wednesday night. Talk to you soon. Bye.